Gladys.
We have a list on our website, warrockandajax.com, called Every Story Ever. What we're doing is we're taking lists from our listeners of three comic book stories, and then we are placing those stories on the list from best to worst comic book stories of all time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special War Rocket Ajax bonus episode. This is the Every Story Ever special for February of 2015. We are your hosts and the arbiters of all things quality in comic books. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, the inimitable Matt Wilson. And Matt, you're number one on my list, buddy.
Thank you, Chris. You're my number one as well, and you cannot nimit me. It's impossible to nimit me.
Can't be done.
Well, we have some Every Story Ever lists to get through. Let's see how many we can plow through in an hour. From our line steppers.
Here come the line steppers.
Who were gracious enough to help us out on Patreon. If you are not familiar with the concept of Every Story Ever, then wind this back about a minute. And listen to the new theme music that we have been given from Lyndon Kaiser, who was really cool in putting together clips of Chris and I explaining what Every Story Ever is all about to music, which will be our theme music for these specials for the foreseeable future, because it makes us not it makes it so we don't have to go through and actually explain this stuff.
And yet you're explaining the theme song now.
Well, that's a one-time thing.
Okay.
All right, let's do a list. Let's call up a list here. This list is coming to us from Ryan Hillis, a longtime listener. The first one he has here is Knight and Squire, which I'm assuming is the miniseries by Paul Cornell.
Yeah. Do you remember who drew that? Jimmy Broxton.
So okay. Not an artist I'm super familiar with, even though I thought that miniseries looked very good.
Oh, yeah, so did I. It is no secret I love the Knight, and particularly the Squire. I'm a huge fan. Do you know who else I'm a huge fan of, Matt?
Paul Cornell?
Jarvis Poker, the British Joker.
That's who I'm a fan yes. of. Yes. What a wonderful concept.
I love the idea of Knight and Squire, and I have loved the idea of Knight and Squire since I first encountered them, you know, reading JLA in the late 90s in the Ultramarine Corps and kind of realizing that the Club of Heroes story had happened. You know, that was something that I went out of my way to track down because I love that idea. I love the idea of the Batman of all nations, because the thing about comics is, you know, you don't see stuff that doesn't take place in very specific locations very often. Right. In Marvel Comics, you rarely see things that take place outside of New York City. In DC Comics, you rarely see things that take place outside of these specific fictional locations, especially America. Like, you will see Superman plugging up a volcano in the South Pacific every now and then, and that's about it. So the idea that there was not only, you know, not only the Batman of all nations, not only the Club of Heroes, but that the thing that Paul Cornell does really well in that series is, and something that Morrison does really well too, when the Knight and Squire show up in Batman Incorporated, is that it really does feel like they have a long history that we just haven't been around for. And there are so many really, really clever touches in that. I'm a big fan of Jarvis Poker, the British Joker. I love that they have a butler who's an American. That's hilarious.
Yes.
And also, Beryl is one of my all-time favorite underused characters in comics. I love her costume. I love her name. I love everything about her. I love that she has that weird Golden Age origin of, you know, she grew up poor, but she read everything in the library. And so now she's a super genius. So support your public libraries, everybody. That's the what you need to take away from that. That said, I do feel like Knight and Squire, the miniseries, as much as I love it, is, I don't want to say ultimately forgettable, because that, you know, that sounds really bad, but like, and it also, you know, we're falling into the trap of things being important over being good, which I like to think that we stay away from that little trap, don't you?
Sometimes we do rank things by importance or include them on the list because of influence and importance, because it's impossible to not do that. I think this series, it's less a matter of importance with this series, though, as I think it is a matter of expectations and whether this lives up to them. Because it's really like not Knight and Squire showing up in, you know, the Club of Heroes and in Batman Inc. and in, you know, in that Morrison run, and getting the little tastes of those characters and feeling like there's so much potential in them. In all those various Batmen, right? And Batwomen and Batman analogs. And then you actually try to put them in a story, and, you know, some of it feels maybe a little rote, or you don't see the potential that you saw when you got them in small doses. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's ultimately the downfall of the series. In a vacuum, this is a very fun miniseries, but I think it's kind of weighed down by expectation.
See, I kind of feel the opposite. Like, I feel if we're judging it by whether it lived up to the expectations of seeing those characters in bits and pieces before, then I think it really does. Like, I think this is kind of exactly the series you want from these characters. And, you know, I feel like it's very comparable to Captain Britain and MI-13 in that way, where it's this, you know, interesting take on the, you know, British superheroics filtered through an American lens and then filtered back through the lens of British creators.
I think the trick of doing a series with characters like these is like not to just put them in a cool situation and have clever ideas. Paul Cornell has clever ideas for days to spare.
I mean, that is true. I mean, we just, you know, if Captain Britain and MI-13 is a book that's almost entirely built on clever ideas.
Yes. But I think that you kind of want a little more depth in there too. And if there's one major complaint about what that series lacks, I think it's a kind of depth.
I think that's a fair complaint, but I think we can all both agree that Knight and Squire is, I think it's going to be certainly above average. It's certainly one that is going to beat a lot of stuff by virtue of the going out the door test, you know?
Yeah. Where I'm looking on the list right now is somewhere in the area of the middle.
I mean, we can go ahead and say it's like, it's not as good as Vampire State. If you just want to purely compare it to other
Paul Cornell
British superhero
stuff.
Books.
I'm looking in the neighborhood of The New Frontier, We Three, Power Girl,
Hercules. I think it's comparable to Power Girl.
Yeah.
I think that's a good neighborhood for it. Because right around Power Girl, we also have Thorkules, which is another really, like, you know, disposable, for lack of a nicer term, story. But that's also really, really good and really fun and just really solid, enjoyable comics that, maybe it's not going to make anybody's list of essential graphic novels you need to buy 10 years from now. But very fun times that you could do a lot worse than picking up. Like, I would say it probably goes below Power Girl, above Thorkules.
I think that's fair.
Because that Power Girl run's really good.
It's very good. I agree. Okay. Next on Ryan's list is Nightfall.
Oh, boy.
Now, this is not Night Quest or Night's Quest. This is Nightfall, the Batman getting his back broken story.
So this is just the, what is it, 19 part?
Yeah.
19 part Nightfall story. Okay, here's the trick with Nightfall. Matt, if you don't mind me kind of going into this.
By all means, take it away.
I've said this before, and it's something that I got from a friend of mine, my friend Scott. Nightfall and Death of Superman both came out around the same time. They're both like that era of DC. Those are the stories, you know? The thing about Death of Superman is that it starts off really, really dumb and gets really, really good. Like, if you actually sit down and read it, it is a story about Superman being punched to death by a bone monster. But then you get a lot of really good stuff out of it. Like, the big joke about, you know, Superman dying and being replaced by four different guys. Like, that's, you know, that's funny and that's weird. But that story is actually really good. And right. A lot of good stuff came out of it.
We have ranked Reign of the Superman and higher than you might expect.
Higher than you might expect. I mean, it's still, like, it's not great, but it's pretty good. Nightfall is the exact opposite. Nightfall starts out brilliant.
Yeah.
And then eventually, like, it goes a long way and gets really, really bad.
Yeah, I mean, Nightfall suffers from Clone Saga syndrome, where there's a seed of a good idea in there, and it just drags on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, like, to the point Nightfall where you're, like, is 19 parts, and it's just the first part.
Yeah. That said, I think Nightfall stands up because, like, when it really starts getting bad is when you start getting to Night's Quest and Azrael Batman, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Azrael Batman is a good idea that kind of goes south on him. Like, Prodigal is also kind of a good idea that kind of goes south on him, and Night Quest is just pretty much garbage.
Yeah.
But, like, Nightfall is, like, the great thing about Nightfall is that, like Death of Superman, Nightfall makes sense.
Well, here's what's really good about Nightfall. It's a villain, Bane, who I think has been diluted over the years. But if you go back and you read those,
oh, undoubtedly,
initial Bane stories, he's brilliant. He is absolutely brilliant because, you know, what is Batman? How is Batman different from other superheroes? At least in the DC universe, he is the most human, right? Like, he can be worn down. So Bane's entire plan is about just wearing him down and wearing him out until he can be broken, which is such – it's the kernel of a great idea for pitting someone against Batman.
Yeah, and it's the idea that – what's Batman going to do? Not go round up all the criminals? Like,
right.
He puts Batman in a situation where, you know, it's very true to his character in a way that Death of Superman isn't. Like, Death of Superman is Superman and a bone monster punching each other to death. And that's, you know, it's dumb. Like, why doesn't he do any, you know, any number of other things to solve that situation? With Nightfall, Bane blows Arkham Asylum open with a rocket launcher. All the criminals get out. And then Batman is kind of in a position where he has to run the gauntlet. He has to fight all of his bad guys one after the other because the alternative is not fighting them. And he can't do that. And it's kind of the first time you really, really get Batman going all out against everybody one right after another.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really cool stuff in that.
And
I will say,
you know, he can have all the gadgets on Earth and he can be infinitely rich, but he's still a man who can get tired.
Yeah.
And ultimately just be, you know, have that stubble that is the Universal Comics representation of being tired.
It really is. And you know what? The weird thing about Nightfall is it's not the last Jim Aparo comic, but it should have been. Like, that is the end of the Jim Aparo era of Batman.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Jim Aparo wasn't still good and Jim Aparo, you know, didn't still do great work or shouldn't have gotten great work out of that. I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, hey, it's the 90s now. Like, hey, this is what we're doing now. Your Batman is not this guy. Like, the guy who goes over Bane's knee is Jim Aparo's Batman, and the guy who comes back is, like, the Kelly Jones Batman.
Yeah. That's very true.
I like Nightfall. I actually like Nightfall a lot. Like, I don't, it's not in my favorite Batman stories, but, like, it's a good idea that was done pretty well. You know, for every little bit of bad dialogue or every time the story kind of takes a weird bad turn, it balances it out with something really good. Like the scene in the issue, what is it? It's 478, is it? Something like that? The breaking of the bat issue.
Yeah.
Like the scene where Alfred, you know, Bane beats up Alfred, and then, you know, Tim Drake runs over and finds him, and they have to have a conversation, like, do we call the cops? Do we call the ambulance? Because, you know, Bruce Wayne is getting the shit kicked out of, you know, Batman's in Wayne Manor with the door to the Batcave open, getting the shit kicked out of him, and he might die. Like, it's a really good conversation that you don't think about until it's happening.
Yeah.
Like, it's... And Nightfall's got a lot going for it.
Again, Nightfall, I think, is largely maligned because of what came after it.
And don't forget that, Batman, the most human hero who is pushed to his breaking point, recovers by his nurse coincidentally having psychic powers that heal him, and then she just goes away.
Yep.
Chandra Kinsolving gets a bad ending.
Okay. Is it better? Here's the big question, I think. Better or worse than No Man's Land? Which is, I'd say, the 2000s version of Nightfall.
No Man's Land is certainly a better accomplishment. We ranked No Man's Land really high when it first came up, and I think one of the reasons that we did that was because it hangs together really well for being 52 comics.
Yeah. And is consistent and doesn't, I mean, you know, it does, it's no mind-blowing story by the time that it ends, but it doesn't, like, have some incredible precipitous drop-off.
There's no World War III in it, you know? No, like when in late November, early December of 1999, there's no, like, scrambling to fix it before it all ends. It all, like, comes together really well. I enjoy No Man's Land more than I enjoy Nightfall. I enjoy individual pieces of No Man's Land more than I enjoy Nightfall. Historically, I think Nightfall is more important, but I don't think Nightfall is as good.
Okay. Is it better or worse than Reign of the Superman?
I think it's better than Reign of the Superman.
Okay.
If we're only counting Nightfall.
Here's what's between No Man's Land and Reign of the Superman. Incredible Hercules Against the World. That's New Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. Deadpool by Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness.
I think it's, you know, I think it goes under all of those.
So just above Reign of the Superman.
What? Do you think it's better than Against the World?
No.
No, it's not. It's not as enjoyable as Against the World. No. So that's where it goes.
Right above Reign of the Superman. The last one we have on Ryan's list is Rom Space Knight.
Oh, shit. y'all know I love some Rom Space Knight. We might have to disqualify it, though, because that is 80 issues of comics.
Yeah.
It's not all a consistent story. You could have given us 1 to 25.
Yeah.
It's
too much. I mean, look, we ranked Starman all as one thing, but it is one big story.
Yeah, also Starman is the product of a completely different era than Rom Space Knight.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to disqualify Rom Space Knight in its entirety.
Yeah.
Ryan, thank you for that list.
Give us individual issues of Rom, give us specific arcs of Rom. Like I said, we could do 1 through 25. That's actually a pretty coherent arc, but we can't do 1 through 80.
All right, Ryan, thank you for that list. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a good list. That was fun.
All right, the next list is from CJ Crawl, who is another line stepper.
Oh, from NXT.
Yeah. The first one on his list is Strike Force Morituri by Peter B. Gillis, number 1 through 20.
I believe that's Strike Force Morituri.
Well, he spelled it wrong.
Okay. Matt, have you read this?
No.
Neither have I, and I have owned it on multiple occasions.
I think by virtue of the fact that I read the misspelled version and believed it to be the title should be evidence enough that I have not.
This is it's one of those comics you always hear about. It's one of those comics that you always hear about being like super good and ahead of its time. It's always compared to Squadron Supreme. It's got a really good premise, which is that people get superpowers and then they die a year later. Like, they're guaranteed to die a year later. It's one of those 80s kind of, 80s limited series, prestige limited series premises. But I've never actually read it. So I can't rank it. I'm sorry.
Maybe we'll come back to it one day. The second one on CJ's list is Howard the Duck, number 1 through 27, and annual number 1 by Steve Gerber. Or Gerber. Is it Gerber?
I've heard it both ways.
Okay.
I've heard Gerber more, but I've also heard people say Gerber quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure which one it actually is. It looks like it should be Gerber, but that's neither here nor there. Howard the Duck, the initial Steve Gerber run of Howard the Duck.
Steve Gerber Gerber?
Yeah.
Larry, Gary, Terry, Gingich, Gingerch.
Yes.
Gerber. I've actually not read this Howard the Duck series.
I have. Okay, and I think
then this is all you.
I think they're very good comics that, again, have this sort of checkered reputation because of a movie. The movie Howard the Duck did so much to malign those Howard, there's original Howard the Duck comics, which
you're about the first Marvel movie.
Yes, which are
about the first Avengers movie, there, bro.
Yeah, I'm talking about Guardians of the Galaxy that Howard the Duck appeared in.
Howard the Duck, the first Avenger. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I'm talking about the George Lucas produced Howard the Duck movie in the 80s.
Did it take us so long to figure out George Lucas was bad?
It stripped away everything that was good about the character Howard the Duck, and all the cleverness and the smartness of it. Like, this is gonna sound like a very, like, I'm overstating something, and perhaps I am, but to me, I think Steve Gerber, in much the same way we revere Kirby for the way he was able to dramatically state something, Steve Gerber was able to put withering satire into these pithy little quotes and do such amazing bits of extremely clever satire that somehow still holds up nigh 40 years later. In these comics, like Trapped in a World He Didn't Create is this amazing tagline for a satirical comic book, you know? I think there is so much good to be said about Howard the Duck. And I think Howard the Duck, you know, I, as I've said many times before, I have like a special place for comics that do humor well. And in some ways, I think Howard the Duck set the template for that. For a lot of, like, you know, mainstream comics that tried to do that later. Even though Marvel, you know, took him off the book eventually. Fired him from the book.
Yeah, that story does not have a happy ending.
It does not.
I mean, it kind of has a happy ending in that Steve Gerber then goes and writes some really good episodes of G.I. Joe.
And he teamed up with Jack Kirby to create a comic that was entirely a fuck you to Stan Lee.
Yes. Which, man, delightful.
Now, that's all that said, I'm not exactly sure where to rank Howard the Duck. I think it may be, weirdly enough, I think it may be comparable to, like, a Devil Dinosaur. A Kirby... what was that, Chris?
I said interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like a weird animal comic that is like the creation of a genius creator. I would be more than willing to just put it like between, say, like Devil Dinosaur and Zot.
That's, I mean, look, I haven't read it, but I trust your judgment on that.
Okay,
I think you make a good argument for it.
Okay, that is where that's going to go. I'm sure there. I guarantee you, there will be people who say I should have put it higher. And
look, you put it with Devil Dinosaur.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a fine position. Okay.
Yeah, it's above Zot, guys. Come on.
Why
are we arguing with the emails that we haven't gotten yet?
I'm mainly just
that
arguing.
I don't read anyway.
I'm arguing with a ghost Benito who's in the room with me. All right, the last one from CJ Crawl is New Mutants by Chris Claremont, number 1 through 54. Now, this may also be too big to rank.
What do you think this is, Rachel and Miles?
What do you think, Chris? Is this too much New Mutants?
I don't know why you picked all the ones I haven't read for this one. I have never been a New Mutants guy. I have never actually read those. I just kind of stuck with Uncanny when I was reading all the Claremont stuff. And I know I should. You don't have to convince me that I should. I know I should. Okay, I will find them. I promise you. But from what I understand, because again, I do listen to Rachel and Miles, there is at least a shift in there from Bob McLeod to Bill Sienkiewicz. So, like, I feel like, again, that is disqualified on the count of being a run and not a story.
Yeah. Well, okay, look. CJ and Ryan, both of you, you're both line steppers. If you want to send us additional lists, so since we had to say we can't include those because we haven't read them or they're too long, then send us other lists with the line stepper password and we will do them. All right. The next list from a line stepper is from Timothy Barnett, who has given us three stories I know you have read.
Okay, good. I'm eager to get my cred back here.
These are three Jack Kirby New Gods stories.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, we can do these.
The first
one. Okay, the pact, yeah, that's number one. That's the new number one.
The first one is The Kingdom of the Damned from The Forever People number 4.
Ooh, now I will say, is that that's the one with the amusement park, right?
Yes. I believe you were right about that.
I was going to say that was probably going to be pretty low because the Forever People are, along with the original X-Men, are kind of my least favorite Jack Kirby creation.
Right.
But that is the best issue of Forever People. That issue rules. I'm actually looking at it right now. The entire idea behind it, the way this book opens is with a splash page where it says, "The Kingdom of the Damned is not a far place. It's not a hidden place. It's in full view of us all. But it has been rigged by a malignant force so that its tormented inmates are seen and heard and ignored." And there's just a shot of this crowd of people banging on these walls and shouting about how they need help and going, "What's wrong?" Like, a guy actually says, "What's wrong with them? Why can't they see our desperate situation?" Because, you know, it's a Kirby book. And then you turn the page and it does, you know, it's Kirby scope. So you have the splash page and the double page splash. And you see that all those people are trapped behind the facade of amusement park rides. And Darkseid and Desaad are manipulating it so that everyone just sees them laughing and screaming and having a good time. When in reality, they're being tortured. And it is an amusement, like, Darkseid just walks around this amusement park laughing about how children know exactly what he is, but adults kind of refuse to see this horrifying evil even when it's right in front of their faces. And Matt, you may have guessed, this is all a metaphor. Like, it is, I mean, and that's the thing about this book, and that's the thing about Kirby in general, is that everything that happens in this book is literally happening in that book. Darkseid literally has built an amusement park where he is literally trapping people and torturing them. But on a metaphorical level, like, that's how the dark side of humanity works. Like, we don't acknowledge the people around us who are going through bad things. Like, we all kind of think of ourselves as the heroes of our own story. So we don't consider the struggles of other people. You know, somebody cuts you off in traffic and you just get mad because that guy's an asshole. You don't know if that guy is just kind of not paying attention and being an asshole, or maybe he's trying to get to his kid's piano recital, or trying to go see his wife in the hospital, or something. That is what that book is about, and it's fucking awesome. Some of the best Darkseid panels. The Forever People, by the way, are almost entirely incidental to the plot of this comic. But it's got some of the best Darkseid stuff, some of the best Desaad stuff. If anybody wants to understand Darkseid and how Darkseid works, and how Darkseid is not just about walking out of a portal and saying his name and punching someone, that is the comic to read. It's one of the best Kirby books ever. And I say that with, you know, as a guy who can take or leave 99% of Forever People stories. That comic is awesome.
Okay. I think that impassioned argument for it is pretty much all that needs to be said. I mean, okay. I guess we'll start with this. Do we think it's better than Mr. Miracle number 9?
Okay, and that's the Hyman story.
That's the Hyman story.
I do. I mean, okay. Hyman's really good, but, like, I mean, look, Darkseid's one of my favorite villains in comics. It's like
that's what really I think sets that story apart, is that it's such a definitive Darkseid story.
Yeah.
It just happens to be
Darkseid's in Hyman too.
Yeah, yeah. But this one's like a definitive, like, figure out who Darkseid is story.
Yeah. This is I think, you know, it's the Rosetta Stone for understanding Darkseid. Like, everything clicks into place with that issue in a way that doesn't necessarily, like, it shows you why he's not, why he's different from all the other villains. You know, why he's not Mongol, why he's not Thanos, you know?
Directly above Hyman is Fantastic Four, This Man, This Monster, and I do not think it's better than that.
I think it's close. I think it's real close. This Man, This Monster is really good. This Man, This Monster is Lee and Kirby at the best possible moment of their collaboration. And I don't know if Happy Land is Jack Kirby on his own, is the peak of Jack Kirby, you know? There are probably better, the Pact is probably better than Happy Land. But I feel like, yeah, it can go below This Man, This Monster.
Okay, that is where it's going. The next one that we have is from The New Gods number 6, The Glory Boat.
Oh, shit, The Glory Boat. Okay, Glory Boat's not as good as Happy Land, and it's not as good as Hyman.
Okay.
But it's good as hell. The Glory Boat rules. That's when the Glory Boat shows up, man. I do not have an impassioned speech. What number is that? That's New Gods 9?
Number 6.
6. 9 is Hyman. I do not have an impassioned speech about the Glory Boat like I do about Happy Land. It's just like, if you want to understand Darkseid, read Happy Land. If you want to understand Jack Kirby, read The Glory Boat. There are better New God stories. I think there's better Kirby stories. The Glory Boat's great, and The Glory Boat has that amazing full page where they are riding The Glory Boat. Where they're, you know, Light Ray and Orion, you know, if we must die, let New Genesis live. It's really good, but it's not as good as other Kirby stuff we have on the list.
Okay, where do you think where do you think the glory boat lands?
Okay, where do I think the glory boat ends up? It's not as good as Hyman. I would say it's probably comparatively. It's definitely above OMAC.
Okay.
The neighborhood that I'm looking at is like Great Darkness Saga, O'Neill and Cowan's Question. It's probably better than Man of Steel.
So the what we have to decide is it above or below Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow?
Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow is really good. Like, it's, you know, and it sucks because I feel like Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow has been beaten, you know, beaten into hamburger over the years.
Yes, it has.
But, you know, just think about how, think about how good it was when that showed up on JLU. And think about how good that animated adaptation of it was. I'm going to say Glory Boat below Whatever Happened.
That feels right. That feels right to me.
That's where my gut is.
Okay. One more from Timothy Barnett. The Paranoid Pill from Miracle Man number 3.
Oh shit, that's a good one too. That's my favorite Death Trap in comics, by the way.
Yes, you've written extensively about that.
Yeah, if anyone wants to know, like, the dude who loves Death Traps, what's his favorite? It's when Dr. Bedlam says, "Hey, here's the deal. All I need you to do is go from the top floor of this building to the bottom floor of this building. If you walk out the front door, then you live." And it's Die Hard. It's reverse Die Hard. It's reverse the Red Redemption, which makes it a reverse Dread as well. And again, it's Kirby loved to play with the idea of people being willing to give up their, you know, people being kind of lured into giving up their concern for others, people being tricked into a kind of dangerous solipsism. And this shows up again and again and again. And it's, you know, it's in Happy Land. It's in The Justifiers. It's the anti-life equation. That's what the anti-life equation is. It's isolation as opposed to community. With this story, this Mr. Miracle story, it's like, again, it is made completely literal when Dr. Bedlam just, you know, doses everybody with hallucinogens and makes them think Scott-Free is a vampire, which is another thing that Kirby liked to play with. Kirby loved doing weird-ass vampire stories. But yeah, you know, it turns them into a mob. And so it's Mr. Miracle, the ultimate escape artist, against a mob of crazed people who want him dead. The only thing that holds it back is that Mr. Miracle's escapes are all complete bullshit. Like, they're all like, oh yeah, you know, I got locked in a safe, and then I cut it open with a laser, and the laser also had a grappling hook in it, and the grappling hook was anti-gravity. Which, you know, that's Kirby Comics. So yeah, I would say, like, I do think that's better than Glory Boat, but I don't think it's as good as
Hyman.
I don't think what's that?
It's Hyman.
Oh no, it's definitely not as good as Hyman. I don't think it's as good as like Tom Strong even.
Okay.
Like they're like it's not as good as Next Wave. It's not as good as Preacher. Man, we were talking about Preacher the other night.
Oh yeah. Oh man.
I think I would put that specific story above Why the Last Man, but you like Why more than I do.
What is right below Why?
Right below Why is Transmet, and then Ecstatics. And look, those are all good comics.
Yeah,
I want to make that clear. We're working the top of the list.
If you wanna put it between Tom Strong and Why, I wouldn't stop you because I know how much you love it. And,
so
and
this
look,
is a favor.
Well, and it is a good, a really cool escape from a trap story.
Yeah. Okay, well then I'm going to do it. The Paranoid Pill goes below Tom Strong, above Why the Last Man.
I think we have time to do one more.
All right, let's lightning round it. Let's do it quick.
All right, this one's from Sean Waters.
Thank you, Sean.
Who is also a line stepper. These are all Kurt Busiek or Kurt Busiek related.
Kurt Busiek and Jace?
Well, some are Kurt Busiek mage. Some are Kurt Busiek Jace. The first one is Aerosmith by Kurt Busiek and Carlos Pacheco.
Aerosmith's one, probably Kurt Busiek's most underrated comic.
Yes, I'm with you on that. I mean, they're very different comics, but the new series of Busiek's that they keep changing the name of, it was Tooth and Claw when it started. I don't remember the title of it now.
Is it not Tooth and Claw anymore?
It changed.
It was solicited as Tooth and Claw, though.
It changed titles.
Okay.
But in a weird way, I kind of see Aerosmith and Tooth and Claw as being comparable, like weirdly related. Like they're similar Kurt Busiek projects. Basically, when he tries to get away from superheroes, he ends up doing vaguely fantasy related stuff.
Yeah, if anybody hasn't read Aerosmith, it's first of all, it's gorgeous. Carlos Pacheco,
it's absolutely
unbelievable.
Beautiful. Yeah.
It's World War I with magic.
Yes.
World War I with dragons.
It's like if World War I had D&D shit thrown into it.
Yeah. It's like if you were wondering what J.K. Rowling was talking about when she talked about Grindelwald. Duking it out with Dumbledore. That's the shit it is. And it's really good. Like it's enjoyable. It's it all holds together really well. It's a compelling story. I think it's actually very memorable. Again, super underrated, which is weird because it's like it's a steampunk Jace too.
Yes, but I think it's just it came at a time which would have been like the late 90s. If yeah. I remember right.
Late 90s, early... I might have been working at the store when it came out, so it might have been early 2000s.
I think it came at a time where it was not seizing on a trend.
Yeah, yeah.
It was this like, weird thing.
2 years later.
Yeah.
Would have been great.
But I also think, like, I think it's weirdly influential. Like, that, like, revisionist history stuff is really... Like, really caught on after that.
Yeah. No joke. I would say, very underrated for our purposes. Where are we going to properly rate it? I don't know. Aerosmith's good, man. Aerosmith, going out the door, beats a lot of comics.
I think the one thing, or the main thing going against it, is that I remember a lot of... like details about Aerosmith. I remember a lot of visuals from Aerosmith.
But you don't remember the overarching plot?
I couldn't tell you. Like, I couldn't describe to you the plot, like, what happened from issue 1 to issue 6.
I fully agree with you because I'm the same way. And I kind of wonder if that's because we have not read it in 10 years.
I mean, I haven't read it in probably, 15 years.
You know, we haven't read it since it came out.
Yeah, but I remember eating it up when it came out.
Yeah. The place that I'm looking at is, I would say, like, right under The Ghost in the Fortress of Solitude. Like, I would put it in the Thunder Frog, Age of the Century, Goodwin and Simonson Manhunter area. And Goodwin and Simonson Manhunter is pretty fucking good.
Yeah, also in there is the last Iron Fist story.
Well, actually, now that I'm looking at it, it's not as good as Doom Quest.
Okay.
It's not as good as Vampire State. It's not as good as Apocalypse War. It's not as good as Final Crisis. It is as good as Secret Wars.
Between Final Crisis and Secret Wars?
I think that's the place for it.
Done. All right. Next up on this Kurt Busiek adjacent list... is Superman Secret Identity by Kurt Busiek and Stuart Immonen.
That's a good-ass comic.
It's a very good-ass comic.
That's like, if you ask me, like, hey, what's a good-ass comic? I'd probably be like, oh, Superman Secret Identity. Is that the one you're talking about?
Another book with just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous art.
Stunning. And the thing is, you would not believe that book was drawn by the same guy who drew Next Wave. You would not believe it if you saw them next to each other.
You could see little bits of the style being similar, But he really changed it up. Like, there's a wholesomeness to Secret Identity that is absent from Next Wave.
Yeah. Completely. I would say it's... I'm going to make a bold predict here. I'm going to make a bold state.
All right.
I guess it's not a prediction. I guess it's a proclamation.
Let's hear it.
A bold procla right here. Secret Identity is the best Superman Elseworlds book.
So you're saying it's better than, like, Red Sun? Better than...
I would say it's better than Red Sun, yeah.
What are some other Superman Elseworlds books?
There's Cal by Dave Gibbons, which is where he is a knight. That was the first time I ever saw the B word in a comic.
Okay.
There's Speeding Bullets. What if Superman was Batman?
Okay.
What else we got?
I guess Superman for All Seasons wasn't technically an Elseworlds book, was it?
No, that was just Superman Year One.
Okay.
I do think Secret Identity is better than For All Seasons, and I do like For All Seasons a lot. It's the best Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale book by far.
I fully agree with that. Okay, we've already established...
We should say, for people who don't know, Secret Identity is a comic set in the real world about a guy named Clark Kent.
Right.
Who... you know, always gets made fun of because he has the same name as Superman, and then he gets superpowers, and then he starts dating a girl named Lois Lane.
It sounds kind of silly when you describe it.
It sounds super silly. It's but so
in,
good.
In execution, it is so good. Okay, so we've already established that it's better than Red Sun.
Yes.
Okay, so that puts it, you know, that cuts off like a bottom part of the list that we don't have to worry about or think about.
Yeah. And Red Sun, we should say, Red Sun is below the middle of the list.
Yeah, it is.
That's how good this list is. That, like, Red Sun and Flex Mentallo and the Dracula issue of Uncanny X-Men, those are, like, below average on this list.
This is a very top-heavy list.
Which is weird, because for a long time, people were aiming for that bottom spot. Everybody wanted to knock out Identity Crisis. Yeah.
Do we think, okay, since we're looking at other Elseworld stories, okay. I think I know the answer to this, but do we think that Secret Identity is better than The Nail, Another Nail?
I like those comics a lot, but yes,
yeah,
Secret Identity is better than those.
I agree with that completely.
Completely different, but, you know, I do think, yes, better.
Do we think it's better than... I don't know. I'm not sure where else to look for comparison. Is there a neighborhood you're looking at?
I mean, I'm mostly looking at Red Sun because, you know, I don't think it's better than, say, I mean, New Frontiers and Elseworlds, technically.
We've got another nail well above that, though.
Yeah. Well, only two slots above that. So, I would say it's...
Better than Planetary?
Comparable to Planetary? I think that might be where it ends up going, because I don't know if it's better than E is for Extinction, or the Ellis Stormwatch, or even Planet Hulk. I know in my heart it is better than the first volume of Walking Dead. I could not tell you if it was better than Planetary, so I think that's where we're putting it.
Between Walking Dead and Planetary?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Done and done. And the last one here on Sean's list is Ruins by Warren Ellis, Cliff and Therese Nielsen, and Chris Muller.
Oh man, let me go ahead and scroll down a little bit.
this is a comic I have not read. So,
oh, have you never read Ruins?
I've never read Ruins.
Oh, it's so bad is the wrong word, but it is. It's bad. It's Warren Ellis being a dick about Marvels. And it's essentially it's another book about Phil Sheldon, but instead of the kind of bright and optimistic look, man on the street look at the Marvel Universe that you got from Marvels, which is essentially, Marvels is in continuity. Marvels is how all that shit happened.
Right.
Ruins is this weird Elseworld, or it's not an Elseworlds, excuse me, it's an Alterniverse, the short-lived Marvel term for non-continuity stories, where it's just like, how can we make this more depressing? Like, there's a part where he goes to, I want to say, and it's been a long time since I've read it, so I might not have the details correct, but it's like he goes to an internment camp where the original X-Men are, and they're just all like fucked up and terrible. Like Kitty Pryde's like missing legs because she phased, she didn't phase all the way through a wall, and it's like it's hilariously like it is very clear in retrospect, knowing what we know about Warren Ellis, that he like thought it was hilarious to do it
Are you saying
because it's.
Warren Ellis was having a laugh?
I think Warren Ellis was having a bit of a laugh. Had a little chuckle at the expense of the fans. But like it is presented, and this is the joke of it, it is presented like dead, gritty, serious. But in that way where like the more Warren Ellis comics you read, the more you're like, okay, this guy's fucking with us.
Yeah.
Like that dude spent a weekend thinking up like, okay, what is the shittiest way this could go? Like Peter Parker like gets cancer from the spider and dies. Like, and all through it, like you see Phil Sheldon wandering around and he's like, I don't think it's supposed to be this way.
So where does it rank, do you think?
It's like the cult bad, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think it's probably like it's arguably better than the cult because the cult was very serious. Like the cult was trying.
The cult was intended to be a story you took seriously.
Right. And but Ruins at the same time might actually be worse than the cult because it's just so like it is Warren Ellis stomping on Kurt Busiek's sandcastle.
Yeah, I also, I don't know, I have a little bit of a tough time with any art that has obvious contempt for its audience. Like I don't like being talked down to by the comics I'm reading.
Yeah, and it's like it's been long enough since I've read it that I can't remember how much of that is actually in there against how much of it is just like, oh, wouldn't it be hilarious if all this stuff was just fucked up and terrible? Like I can't remember if it's it, ha, where it falls on the Mark Miller scale,
Right.
the
Is it,
old man Logan to wanted scale.
yeah, is it just an attempt to be like, isn't this funny? Or is it actively like, hey, audience, fuck you. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it ain't Kick-Ass.
Yeah. We can agree it's better than Flashpoint. Yes?
Oh yeah, Flashpoint's garbage.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just whether it goes above or below the cult.
Yeah, like it's not it, I mean it's not as good as like it's I mean, look, I'm looking at what we have above Flashpoint. You put Forever Evil on there. You argued for that one.
It made me
You
laugh
put
in places.
Yeah, it's so it's not like it's not as good as Forever Evil. Like yeah, I would say it probably goes I would like I hate the cult, but I would rather read the cult again than read Ruins again.
Okay, that there it is. It's between the cult and Flashpoint. Sorry.
And look, I just want to point out, Warren Ellis has made a real good showing on this
Hey,
list so far.
Transmetropolitan is highly ranked.
Yeah, Next Wave is like top 20.
Yeah. So,
Stormwatch,
look,
top quadrant.
Warren, we got nothing against you.
Yeah, we're fans. Planetary is Planetary is one of our measuring stick comics in this.
That's right. All right, we got in four lists in this special, even though some of those lists we had to, not do parts of.
Yeah, sorry, everybody.
But thanks for sending on in those lists, everybody. We will be doing another special in March, so get ready for that. Take 28 days to prepare yourself. Prepare your body, mind, and spirit for another Every Story Ever special.
Do some meditation. Go under the waterfall.
We will be back to see you then. In the meantime, we'll be doing our weekly episodes of War Rocket Ajax and Movie Fighters and everything else. Go check out our Every Story Ever list on warrocketajax.com. I desperately hope to have that updated very soon. If you know the episode numbers, by the way, for the entries that do not have episode numbers, then let me know what those are. I need some help there. And that's it. That's it for this special. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. We appreciate it. High-minded MW for Matt, at the ISB for me. Follow us on Twitter. Matt,
All right, that's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Forever, 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 ever, forever.
Yes!
From this day on, as every creed of Mongol lived together.